saw you open eyes. Unimportant as those yesterday.
We're playing the New Zealand rock band The Found on Take It From Us as our theme tune for our mental health radio program. They're a trio of Kiwi musicians, two of whom are mental health consumers. Let's listen to some more of their track, Long Gone. Welcome to Take It From Us on what is a pretty blustery Tuesday with a few showers racing across the city. Take It From Us, of course, is brought to you by Framework and the Like Minds, Like Mind campaign. I'm your host, Sheldon Brown, and Take It From Us is the voice of mental health on Planet FM and addresses reducing stigma and discrimination against people with lived experience of mental distress. One goal of Like Minds is to emphasise that people with experience of mental distress have the same opportunities as everyone else to participate in society and in the everyday lives of their families and whānau. The overall goal is to create a New Zealand that values and includes people with lived experience of mental distress. Now, today's broadcast is about something that all of us have to manage. It's about coping skills for mental health. We can put it another way, and that is coping for recovery. And recovery is something that we really try and push very much on Take It From Us. Late last week, I was hit between the eyes by an email about the coping kete, or basket. It told me there was a celebration of the Coping Kete's one-year anniversary. And this email went on to say that a website had just posted the 52nd weekly strategy for coping. So you can now find a new coping strategy to try out every week of the year. That website, engagenz.co.nz, promised a lot more by saying, "And it won't be ending here, we've just gotten started. Every week we post a new coping strategy for you to experiment with in your journey toward better mental health." And experiment is very much a word that we're going to be talking about today. It got me thinking about coping skills, and I typed into Google the words mental health coping skills. There were 4,560,000 results that came up. You can access handouts on basic coping, bipolar disorder coping, coping skills for mental illness, mental health prevention strategies, and how to have good mental health, and just about everything in between. There's coping strategies for stress, for addiction, for anxiety and depression, even coping strategies for kids. Now, today I was going to be sort of talking on my own about coping, but we've got a surprise package in the studio, and that's Miriam Barr, who's a mental health promoter from Mind and Body Consultants, and obviously too from Like Mind. So welcome, Miriam.
Thank you.
Yeah, and of course you're one of the architects of EngageNZ.co.nz and Engage Aotearoa.
That's right. I am the service director there.
Wow.
And I design all of our recovery promotion strategies and also the coping kite.
And we're going to open the lines today if any of our listeners would like to comment about their own coping strategies, what's worked for them, what perhaps hasn't. And we're on Auckland 815 8100, so give us a call at any stage if you'd like to talk to Miriam about the coping kite and the fact that, well, there are 57 strategies that you can take a look at on that engage.co.nz. But Miriam, where did all this start, this coping basket?
Well, it started in my own personal life. I, years ago, struggled with alcohol addiction. I was pretty dependent on it, physically dependent on it. So I needed to drink. Otherwise, I started to get kind of sick. And I didn't want to be like that anymore. But when it came to the crunch moment of deciding, am I going to drink now or do something else, I was so overcome with craving and things like that that I couldn't think of a single thing to do other than I want to have a drink. So the very, very first coping kite was a manila folder on my wall in my bedroom. And I would fill that up with as many different thousands of activities as I could think of, anything that you could do. So I had wash the walls, make a card, bake a cake, all of that kind of stuff written on small bits of paper, stuffed in a manila envelope. And whenever I felt that feeling of I want to drink, I didn't have to make a decision for myself anymore. I just pulled something, anything out of that manila envelope, and I did whatever it was on the card. And in that way, I started to change what my automatic response to the distress was.
So those things in that manila envelope on the wall in the bedroom mm-hmm. weren't necessarily things that you like to do. They were just ideas that were going to divert, be a diversion?
Yeah, they were diversion strategies. And some of those things, over time, I started realising that some of them were what you could call neutrals. They were things that took me away from right now and got me doing something else, but they didn't have a great big effect later. And then some of them actually created positive emotion out of something that was feeling really bad. So they would give me a feeling of achievement or connect me with somebody else. And so I started, I suppose, back then developing what is now the categories of coping that you can find on this website now. Yeah, and so once I conquered the alcohol addiction, I later had to conquer self-harm, which was slightly related, I suppose. And so my manila folder became my coping jar, and I listed on the outside of it all the people that I could ring and when I felt like hurting myself. And then inside were more of those same strategies that I'd had before. And so then once again, whenever I felt like self-harming or doing the thing I didn't want to do anymore, I had this whole host of other things that were available.
Did the jar get bigger as you put more strategies in there?
It did get more and more full, yes.
More full and
yeah.
bigger.
And then I think, I don't use my jar anymore. My jar is gone. My jar, it kind of exists in my head now. And so when I come up against a distressing thing that before would have turned me into a bit of a tailspin, I sort of mentally can pick through these strategies in my head in almost as automatic a way as I used to turn to having a beer, you know. So,
well, it's quite a revelation actually, because you and I have spoken personally on Take It From Us several times. Mm. You've been a guest and you've told your personal story here, but I don't ever recall you mentioning alcohol before.
No, probably not. Well, you can't lay everything on everyone in one big go, I suppose, as well.
You've got a few more surprises, have you?
I've got a few things that had happened, so we were probably focusing on some other dark region of my recesses that day.
Right. What did you find were those pleasant things, those pleasant coping strategies that helped you through that self-harm and that alcohol issue?
Well, it would be different for absolutely everybody, I imagine, because what's pleasant to one person will be not pleasant to somebody else. For me, the biggest things were about finding ways, once I'd learned how to self-soothe, finding ways to be able to connect with other people. That was sort of really, really, really crucial. So if I am ever feeling distressed, my natural reaction is to move away from everyone around me and to make a little cave, and I'll sit in there and you know, fester. So for me, some of the most valuable positive coping strategies were the ones that took me out of my cave next to somebody who cared for me, genuinely cared for me. So that was a long journey of building a life where those people existed around me and I could notice them. So the engagement category in the coping kete, I think, is quite crucial for that for me.
Engaging with people.
Well, there's four categories on the coping kete. So we say there are kind of four different ways that you can cope positively, in the self-soothing, and one the other strategy is expression and support is one category, and then there's mindful distraction is the third one, and then the last one is engagement, and it's about connecting with positive opportunities around you so that you're going to be set up for good coping later. Yeah.
Well, I guess one of the things about coping is that it doesn't just apply to people who have the challenge of mental health. I mean, we all have to cope every particular day, don't we?
Every moment. You're coping right now and I'm coping right now. All of us are. And I think, you know, when we hear the word coping strategy, it can sound like coping is some sort of super aware decision that we make in our days. But actually it's an unconscious automatic habit of how you deal with the world. Mm. And so it's going to be really extremely hard to change that because it's automatic, which is why I found using something where I could pull out ideas much easier than expecting myself to spontaneously think of things in the moment.
So can we go to a bit of a definition? Engage has got a definition of coping?
Yeah, we do. I mean, there's heaps of definitions. Sheldon, you were telling me one earlier about coping with dealing with taxing things that tax you. And our definition of it definitely includes that, but it's a bit broader. So we just say that coping is anything that you do to get you through the moment.
Right. Anything you do to get you through the moment.
Yeah. So it's about surviving, because if you think about it, coping strategies help you manage things.
Right.
And we're constantly trying to manage our environment. Our mind is trying to understand it so that we can manage it. And it's telling us what it means so we can manage it.
Using the word surviving, though, always to me has a bit of a negative connotation, that we're sort of just getting through.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
just getting through.
It can have that meaning, but I suppose I talk of it in a bit more of a maybe psychological sense, in terms of we are all, as human beings, our brain is primarily concerned with keeping us alive on the planet. And so if you think about all of the different thoughts you have during the day and things like that, really they are also concerned with keeping you alive. But survival isn't just your physical survival. Your brain's also concerned with your social survival, because when your brain wired itself up how it is now, your survival did depend on your tribe liking you and not kicking you out of the cave, because if they did, you were going to get trampled by the woolly mammoth. And so our brain is still wired up so that if I am to expect some kind of social rejection, my brain will make me have a survival reaction, and we're constantly coming in and out of that place throughout our days as our as our brain tries to make sure that this body stays on the planet, you know.
So when the woolly mammoth sort of comes to cross the road and you're driving your little motor scooter down Carrington Road, obviously you've got to do something to get out of the way of the woolly mammoth, but is there something when you're distressed that you would opt for over and above anything else?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is if you're not experiencing mental unwellness, then that time when you see the woolly mammoth on the road and you get the sense of fear, it's actually really accurate. And so the most valuable thing that you can do in that situation is to run away, isn't it? Because that is what, there's a threat right there. Mm. So the most logical thing to do is to leave. But what I find with dealing with depression and post-traumatic stress disorder is that sometimes I'm incorrect and the woolly mammoth isn't actually there. I just kind of think it is. And so for me, the very first thing that I've learned to do, and which I didn't do before, is to question that very first feeling when I get it, and to try and decide, is this me reacting to something that actually happened 15 years ago and I still feel it, or is it me reacting to something that's happening right now? And if it really is happening, then that will determine how I should cope. Mm. I should maybe problem solve or do something active and behavioural, but if the mammoth isn't there anymore and I'm interpreting it, then I need to do something like self-soothing or working on what I'm paying attention to at the moment.
But I mean, sometimes, and seriously, maybe the woolly mammoth is diverting us away from this coping discussion, but sometimes we have to conquer that woolly mammoth, don't we? Because we get a great deal of satisfaction if we're successful in maybe slaying it or slaying the idea of it and conquering something, taking a risk and actually achieving a success.
Absolutely. That's what engagement is all about. Totally.
Yeah. So engagement is successfully engaging with our friends and achieving a fun or pleasant experience out of that.
That, and also part of it is being able to engage with the moment, whatever it is. So, you know, I might see something distressing and start to feel distressed and go, oh no, I don't want to feel distressed, I can't feel distressed, that's a terrible thing, I shouldn't be distressed, and try and push it away, and that actually makes it worse. And so engagement is being able to go, ah, oh, I feel really, really terrible, I need to do something about that, and stay with where you're at.
And it might be engaging with somebody at work that you're not getting on with, and, you know, I guess
problem solving. And
Right. And I do think there's a tendency for Kiwis to not address those things that are really bugging us. Mm. And we'll go and talk to a third party about it. But we do need to be able to cope, don't we, with addressing issues that are perhaps stressing us.
Exactly. And I suppose there's a really good distinction that gets made in all of the research and stuff about coping with things. You can do it in two different general ways. They say you can either focus on the feelings that you're having and trying to change the feelings, or you can focus on what caused the feelings, which we refer to as the problem. So we call that problem-focused coping. And it would seem that people who do more of that, more of the coping where you go, I feel terrible, it's because of XYZ, and you go and do something about XYZ, that's where you start having more and more wellness experiences and less unwellness.
But isn't a tremendous amount of, you know, how we're feeling, how we're responding, about the messages that we're telling ourselves?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And so many of the things that have worked for me have been about being able to find a new idea that I would be able to comfortably exist with in the moment. Mm. So instead of thinking, oh my God, that's going to happen and I'll never be able to cope with it, I could think, oh my God, that's going to happen, it will probably be really awful, but I'm sure I'll deal with it, which is just slightly different. And it's just different enough for me to be able to think I'll get through the moment and bring the distress down.
Mm. But one way of countering that, it seems to me, is to not think too far in the future, not to live in the future and have this fear about this thing that might happen.
Mm.
If we're living in the moment, then we're not too concerned about what's going to happen after we leave this radio show.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's a really excellent example of thought-based self-soothing. Mm. And I imagine that when you go through your day, some of the time when you start to feel stressed out or distressed about something, you can say to yourself, hold on, that hasn't happened yet. And that becomes a coping strategy for you.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, I think living in the moment actually is one of my very positive coping strategies. You know, if I think about, it's pouring with rain today, it's very windy, I won't be playing tennis, I'll be going home, live alone, you know, long hours at home on my... I mean, I could get myself into a right state about that whole condition. Mm. But none of those things do I know. The wind might drop, the rain might stay away. I mean, have a fabulous game of tennis and, you know, cook a wonderful meal and have a good night's sleep. And
so there's another thing that you did there, which we don't usually notice ourselves doing. It's called positive reappraisal, where you take what you first thought and you flick it through a different positive filter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that people who don't have an experience of mental unwellness, that they tend to do really automatically. And it's something that a lot of us who have experienced unwellness, we need to kind of learn it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, let's come back and talk about reappraising some of our thoughts with Miriam. We do have the lines open if anybody would like to contribute to this discussion about coping. You can call us on Auckland 815 8100. But Miriam, you've got a song that you've selected for today. What's that?
I do. It's one of my favourite songs. Partially for its music video, which you won't be able to hear. The music video has a young girl dressed up in a bumblebee costume, and she's all very alone at the beginning, and everybody thinks that she's really weird, but she keeps dancing in her bumblebee costume through the streets, and everyone's staring at her, and but she still keeps doing it, and she eventually finds somewhere where everyone's dressed up in the same weird outfit as her, all dancing around, and she's like, you know, hallelujah, I've found my people. This is a thing that I use as a coping strategy, which is to play this song and I'll dance around my lounge to it.
You don't like my point of view, but I'm insane. It's not sane. It's not sane.
Well, that's Blind Melon with a track that has been selected by a guest, Miriam Barr, who is with Like Minds and Mind and Body Consultant as a mental health promoter. And we're talking about...
And Engage
Aotearoa. And Engage Aotearoa, of course. And we're talking about coping. And there are 52 strategies on the engagenz.co.nz website. So we're recommending that you check that out. There may be a strategy there that is really going to suit and help. And we've also got the lines open if anyone would like to call on 815 8100. But reappraising our thinking, I'd say that's probably my top coping strategy.
Yeah, it's really powerful. It's hard to do. I don't know how you found it. I had lots of therapists who suggested that kind of thing to me, doing different self-talk in my head and things like that for a long time. And I always kind of felt like I was lying to myself when I said these nice thoughts to myself in my head, or if I said, oh, I don't know what the future's
What sort of things did you try to say to yourself to turn things around?
They were really simple things, and it's interesting because these days they do work for me. So I think there are things we need to persevere through to get to that point. But I'm okay is huge for me. I'm safe right now. Hey, brainstem, calm down. I'm safe right now. Yeah. Yeah, and that I'll get through it is really huge, because that was something that I never really thought before, that I knew how to handle the world. Yeah.
What about interrupting some of those distressing thoughts, though? And I mean, often if we don't sleep well as a result of being depressed or anxious, we wake up in the middle of the night and then we start to stew, you know, and we get more and more agitated. Unless we interrupt that, you know, we can get out of bed the next morning at 7 feeling like a wrung out prune.
Oh, exactly. And then you're set up for your day to have more negative emotions than you would be if you were well rested. I think the main problem is that we start thinking something we don't really want to be thinking about, and so we try to suppress it, which is a coping strategy in itself, to try not to show something and to try and stop thinking something. But the unfortunate thing is that human beings can only do things. We can't not do things. So as soon as you start saying to yourself, stop thinking about this, as a coping strategy, you'll actually think about it more.
Well, Professor John Reed said that on our show about 3 or 4 weeks ago. In fact, we replayed his interview, and he said, think about white elephants and stop thinking about them.
Yeah, that's the classic experiment that got done back in the day. Was they got wired people up to all sorts of things that measured their pulse and skin sweating rates and things like that. And then they said to them, don't think of a white polar bear. And then the people had to sort of record how many times a white polar bear actually popped into their head. And what turns out is if you try to not think of a white polar bear, your brain has to constantly scan your mind for thoughts of a white polar bear so that it can stop them, which means that it's constantly looking for white polar bears. So you start thinking about it all the time. So that's why we put in the coping kit a mindful distraction. And And this is about moving ourselves away from those unhelpful thoughts, but not in a way that's trying to suppress them, to try and make them go away. So we're not thinking about what's bothering us. We're doing something else.
So at night time, what I find is if I do start to sort of cogitate on something, worry about something, stress about it, I do try and say to myself, well, there's nothing I can do about that right at the moment, and I'm going to really stress myself out if I carry on thinking about it. So that has been a nice little exercise, which, and I find, when I think back of how good a night's sleep I might have had, I remember that little instance and I know that I've gone back to sleep. Whereas in the past, 6, 7, 8 years ago,
you couldn't.
I couldn't.
It was really powerful stuff. For me, in those times, it's going to bed, and as soon as I lie down, all the things I've been too busy to think about during the day flock into my head. And saying things like what you say, yep, that totally helps as well. But I also, I find visualizations and breathing exercises at that time really good because I'm already lying down, so it's the perfect time to practice doing a breathing exercise. And that starts to calm down all your bodily reactions to stress. And then in my mind, I do a visualization of some kind. Often it's one that my mum gave me, which is to imagine myself floating on my back down a really slow river with the sun shining on me. So it's like warm and you go down the river. And then I'm thinking about that and I'm not thinking about that other thing. And so eventually I seem to fall asleep.
That's a lovely image. I mean, I can imagine just how helpful that could be to relax you, and that's what you referred to as self-soothing.
Yeah, definitely. And most strategies, especially the really good ones, they do more than one thing at once. So that visualization teamed up with a breathing exercise that deals with some physical responses. It's soothing because it's a comforting image, isn't it? But it's also distraction because it's taking my mind away from what's currently distressing, and it's doing it in a positive way. And then if one of those stressful thoughts comes back into my mind, which it will, I don't just go and try and suppress it again. I go, oh, look, there's the thought coming back into my mind again. I'm still thinking about that. And then I say what you say. I'll worry about that tomorrow. It will still be there. And go back to my visualization. So there's no moment in there where I'm being mean to myself or judging myself for, letting the thought into my head. It's okay for the thought to come into my head. So you can see there's a whole host of strategies going on in that one moment.
And that's one of the essences of meditation, I think, in that we should, when we're meditating and we will feel those and be conscious of those thoughts coming into our minds, but we just sort of let them flow through.
Yeah, exactly. That's called mindfulness. And those sorts of strategies around acceptance and things like that, they pop up in so many different kinds of really effective therapy and things like that. There's this saying, I say it all the time, I probably said it last time I was on here, but you can't leave until you let yourself arrive. And so if we feel bad and we're trying to not let ourselves properly arrive in feeling bad, then we can't ever get to the point where we manage to resolve it and leave. And I think that's the essential message of acceptance and mindfulness, is that we need to constantly be letting ourselves arrive so that we can keep moving on in our day.
I mean, how do you explain mindfulness?
Oh, damn you, Sheldon.
Well, maybe I can help.
It's difficult to explain, but the most simple way, I think, is it's awareness, and it is being able to observe and describe your awareness. Yeah.
But it can be about just fixing on something for a short period of time, whether it be that camellia outside the window that I'm looking at and you're missing out on.
Yeah, because I'm looking at you.
Right. So I bet the camellia is a lot better looking.
Yeah, I mean, the father of modern psychology, he said, my experience is what I agree to attend to. Oh. If I refuse to attend to the camellia out there, it doesn't exist to me. It only exists to you, and it cannot affect me. Mm. And so mindfulness is about taking charge of that process. And, well, I'm going to direct my attention with awareness to the things that I need to be focusing on right now. And sometimes that might be moving it outside of your body and focusing on counting the colours in a room, making yourself mindful of the colours in a room so that you're not sitting there being hugely mindful of your failures, for instance, or like you just said, being mindful of the camellia. And that is actually one of my favourite coping strategies, and it's one that also doesn't work at all for some people, but I find it useful if I'm distressed to go outside and I do a mindfulness activity about noticing the light. And so I look around me and I notice all the different ways that the light is in the different bits. So the light under the tree and the light in the sky and the light by the car. Mm. And I just kind of let that be around me, this beautiful light of things. And then I might move to how the light looks on each different object. And it's a moment of noticing beauty, really. Mm. That because I'm noticing beauty, I feel good in that moment.
Well, last night I was playing tennis and the clouds got blacker and blacker and the lightning started to flash and then the thunder started to crash. And it was so intense, in fact, that my partner was quite put off by a clap of thunder, you know. But, yeah, we were noticing that. Whether it was affecting our tennis or not, I don't know. But we anticipated that we were going to have to make a very fast dash very quickly.
Yeah
well, let's go to another music break. And we've got a track from the Dudes, which we've played, and this was a live concert by the Dudes to celebrate Radio Hauraki's 40th birthday.
Here's a song called On the Rocks.
I'm not afraid to run aground. Someone sent for the lifesaver. I think I'm gonna drown on the rock. On the rock. Yeah. On the rock. Yeah. On the rock. Someone. S-O-N. On the rock. Someone. Help. On the rock.
that's the Dudes, the Radio Hierarchy 40th birthday, which happened probably 5 or 6 years ago, and that's called On the Rocks. And we're talking to Miriam Barr from Like Minds, Mind and Body, and obviously from Engage, about coping, and that's something that all of us have to address every day, I guess. But how do you use the coping kit, Miriam?
Well, the Coping Kit is a blog, so every week we will post up, and we usually post them on Thursdays, a new coping strategy for people to try. And the idea is that you take that strategy, write it down briefly on a piece of card or a piece of paper somewhere at home so that you can remember what it is. And you spend a week or 2 weeks with that strategy trying to practice it, figure out how it would work for you, because chances are you'll need to change it in some way to make it suit your preferences, and also just to find out whether or not it is for you. And so then if you decide that that's a strategy that you like and you want to keep, you add it to your coping kit, which could be anything you want. It could be like my first one was, just an envelope stuck to your wall. But start throwing the strategies that you like in that kit. So, and if you can, sit down and throw in all the ones that you already know that you do so that they're there ready for you. And then throughout your weeks and your days, whenever you start having those crunch moments of distress and not knowing how to cope, you go to your coping kit and you pull out the strategies that have been working for you in the past and you try one. And if you still feel crap afterwards, you come back to your kit and you pull out another one, because we're all constantly coping. And try and make it so that the new things that you add each week, because obviously you keep coming back to the kit and you each week you try out and practice and experiment with a new thing.
If the strategies that we have been using currently are working really well, is there a need to experiment with new ones that they may even be better than the ones we've currently got?
Well, yeah, I do think so. And the reason why I say yes so quickly is because all of the research that I did when I was studying and reading what studies had been done before, it showed there wasn't really any strategy that was the best kind of strategy to use. All of them are good some of the time. And the key, when you found, the key seemed to be being able to be flexible. And so no matter where you are in your life, if you're starting to feel stuck somehow and like you're having the same kinds of experiences over and over again, chances are that you're coping strategies has become inflexible, that maybe you're using the same ways of coping every time and so you keep having the same responses. So, I mean, yes, definitely, I think that you can always be expanding it and adding it and growing it and changing the different ways that you can use things. So you've got everything available to you then, and then you have, I mean, now I have utter confidence that unless I'm hit by a bus, that I can cope. Mm. And, oh my gosh, that's an amazing, really empowering idea. And I bet there are heaps of people listening who don't feel that, who don't think they can cope. And once you think you can cope, things are better. They just are better because I can cope. Why do I have to be afraid of coming on the radio or trying to do the thing I've always wanted to do or meeting a friend? Because if it goes badly, I know that I can cope. And that comes from having not three things that work well for me. It comes from having 100 things that sometimes work for me and the willingness to try as many different ones of them as possible, I think.
I mean, you said about meeting a friend. I mean, if it fails, you can cope. But if we turn that around and sort of say to ourselves, well, you know, if it's a success meeting this friend, it's going to be a real joy and it's going to be fabulous to see them or whatever. Mm. I mean, doesn't that automatically take a lot of the stress out?
Yeah, then if absolutely. It fails, and that's part of coping, and we don't realise that often. Because I would have thought when I was going to meet the people, the thoughts in my head would have been, predicting a negative future is probably the easiest way to say it. It would be predicting a negative future. And what you just did was you predicted a positive future. Mm. And that's an excellent coping strategy to use. And then when you use that, it can let you get over it enough to make that reach out.
So you've also extended these coping messages to the Like Minds work that you do.
Yeah, well, see, I work half my week at Like Minds at Mind and Body, and I work the other half doing Engage Aotearoa. And in our work at Like Minds, which just like your radio show is trying to reduce stigma and discrimination, is that when people can tap into how coping and distress works in their own life, they can much better understand what it would be like to not have those strategies and to not know how to cope with your distress and to not be able to turn the volume down. And so in not all of them, but in a lot of our workshops with professionals or with students who are looking to be professionals, we get them building their own collective coping kete that they can use to cope with the stress of their jobs. But in doing that, we kind of help them understand how mental unwellness relates to their own sense of distress and stress in their life. Yeah, and also relate to that feeling of not being able to cope.
Take it from us, Community Notice Board.
Thanks to the Like Minds, Like Mind campaign and framework.
Now, we've just been sent a RAP facilitation skills training, which is going to happen next month in Auckland between the 8th and the 12th of August, and again the 15th and 19th of Auckland. The facilitators of this are a Stephen Polklington and Frank Bristol. It's being run by Connect and the Regional Consumer Network and Balance New Zealand. Now, registrations can be made with Balance. The phone number there is 06, which I think must be down the line, probably somewhere in the Wairarapa, and the number is 06-345-4488. There is a little bit of a catch with this recovery and RAP facilitation in that the cost is pretty expensive. It's about $950. So, make some inquiry, but that cost may be a little bit of a barrier to some of our listeners. We've also been promoting the new bipolar support group, which is running at the Glenfield Community Centre. That's on the corner of Bentley and Glenfield Roads, and Braden Curran is associated with that and is one of the organisers. It meets every second and fourth Tuesday. So, in fact, it's meeting today at 12:30 to 2. So it'll be again in 2 weeks' time. And it's 12:30 to 2. So get along to the Glenfield Community Centre for that new bipolar support group. We've also been promoting the youth-focused interactive website www.thelowdown.co.nz and www.depression.org.nz, which contains what is called the Journal. And both of those we're going to hear more about on Take It From Us next week when we have Lifeline talking about all their helpline facilities. The Hearing Voices support groups are still meeting, very much so. They've got a Glenfield group, which is meeting at Connect Supporting Recovery. That's 215 Wairau Road, Glenfield, and that's every Thursday. Now, every Thursday between 2 and 3.30.
And we also have the Rethink Possible Worlds YouTube competition, which will be launching itself on July the 22nd at the Civic Winter Gardens. You can enter the YouTube competition or find out more details at www.theliterati.com or by visiting the Mind and Body Light Minds website at www.rethink.org.nz.
And there is another new Hearing Voices support group, the Green Lane Group, which is meeting at the Green Lane Presbyterian Church, which is the corner of Great South Road and Green Lane West. That's every second Wednesday between 1 and 2.30. It's very close to McDonald's on that big intersection of Green Lane and Great South Road, I think it is. And its next meeting is going to be the 27th of July. Jim Douglas is associated with that from Affinity Services, and you can ring Jim on 531-4040 extension 9377. So we're talking today to Miriam Barr, and Miriam, you're talking about how you're using the Coping Kete and the Like Minds work. Are there other things that you can say about that in terms of the feedback that you're getting from some of the workshops?
Just that they seem to be really useful. It's not often that we ever in our ordinary lives discuss with each other how is it that you handle being on the planet? And these kinds of exercises give people a chance to do that in a really real and genuine way. And not only that, but you leave having learned something from each other and with something to try that somebody else gave you, which is, I think, a really, really positive experience.
So have there been, recovery and coping skills that have cropped up from people that you haven't thought of yourself?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I try to gather as many different things as possible. So the Coping Kete has some strategies in it that have worked for me, but they all come from the kete that people have built and engaged groups over the last 3 years. So they're things that have worked for a whole range of people. And what I really like in doing those groups is the experience that people get to have when they get to be an expert in sharing something with somebody else, and then they get to see someone like me who they may see as some sort of expert or something, me going, "Hell yeah, that's awesome, man. Can I steal it? Can I steal it and share it with people, please?" And it's just a really positive, sort of genuine people helping each other. And that's what the Coping Kete is online as well. It's real people who've been trying to overcome their distress, helping other people overcome their distress by letting me pass on what's been working for them. And when we do the Regional Consumer Network on next Thursday, we'll be hopefully doing a little Coping Kete exercise with the people there. And so from that day, hopefully we'll get one strategy from everyone present at Regional Consumer Network of what helps them, and then we'll feed that through the Coping Kete out to other people.
Yeah, so in fact, we should have included that in our community notices on Take It From Us, but the Regional Consumer Network Monthly Forum is going to be on Thursday, July the 21st, so I think that's Thursday week, and it's going to be about the official celebration and launch of the Engage website, Maria.
Yeah, well, that will be a small part of it. We've been given, I think, half an hour to present to everybody what the new website looks like and how you use the Kete, and then we'll do this little exercise that I was just telling you about then. And I think that also Akina Peer Support Program is going to come and talk, and so is some people from Mahitahi Trust.
And are they going to be talking about coping as well?
They'll be doing their own thing. I haven't seen Akina Peer Support talk before, but I've seen people from Mahitahi Trust talk before, and so I kind of know that we will be relevant to each other. A lot of what they do is about using Māori cultural things to get people involved in doing something positive. And if you were to break down what went on when you learned how to do one of those things, you would discover a whole lot of different things that people are developing their coping skills while they're there doing it.
So what sort of things do you want people to come along with, just their ideas on how they've coped?
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't even need to come along with an idea. Just come along with yourself and all your richness of experience, and maybe just the idea that somebody else out there would benefit from you sharing parts of that.
Okay, well, that's the 21st of July, so that's Thursday week. It's at the Western Springs Community Garden Hall, and it's 9:30 to 12:30. So that's the regular monthly forum, but, there's going to be a lot of talk about what we've been talking about on Take It From Us today, coping skills, coping strategies. But also along there is going to be Mahi Tahi Trust and Akina Peer Support. So, yeah, looking forward to that one.
Yeah, it will be a good day. I mean, if you have any questions at all about how this kind of thing would work, bring them too, because I'm most happy to answer questions and things like that. Yeah.
So, in terms of your key coping skill, Miriam, have you got one that you'd pull out of the kit that you use regularly and effectively?
Well, I've probably mentioned them already, but the I can cope with this, number one on my list.
So that's the self-talk.
Yeah, number one on my list is I can cope with this, even though I might feel like I can't, but I can.
Right.
Because otherwise I wouldn't be still alive if I couldn't cope with the world.
Yeah, well, that's a very positive place to leave our interview with Miriam. And next week we're going to be talking to a Lifeline about all of their helplines. And, in fact, they've got a myriad of helplines, which some of us don't probably know about. So tune in on 104.6 FM for Take It From Us next Tuesday.